All right, we're going to go back to Psalm chapter 15 this morning. Psalm chapter 15. And this one probably would have been more timely for last week, but I'm sure that's why God didn't let me do it last week. Let me go get me all set up here. And so I think next week's the last Sunday for this month, so it timed out just perfectly, because I got one more after this one. But in this penultimate lesson in Psalm 15, we find yet another trait that is unbecoming of a saint and is quite frankly not going to be there if you are a saint. And this whole chapter is built around the traits of a person who will dwell in the Lord's holy hill, the person who will dwell with the Lord, the person who is chasing after God. Just a brief recap, we've talked about the spirit of usury and how it contaminates every aspect of your life to the point where it'll be out for you, yourself, and nothing else. We have talked about the integrity of a righteous man who keeps his promise, whether it benefits him or hurts him, and how that relates to his commitment to Christ. And we've also talked about last week how he views sin and holds people in contempt for their sin, not accepting but understanding that their sin is what separates them from the God that they serve. And all these have focused on mostly spiritual aspects, but this one, of course, just comes right out to the physical aspect, starting out there and then building backwards. So let's go ahead and read Psalm chapter 15 again. Let's read the whole chapter. It says, Lord, who shall abide in thy tabernacle? Who shall dwell in thy holy hill? He that walketh uprightly, and worketh righteousness, and speaketh the truth in his heart. He that backbiteth not with his tongue, nor doth evil to his neighbor, nor taketh up a reproach against his neighbor. In whose eyes a vile person is contemned, but he honoreth them that fear the Lord. He that sweareth to his own hurt, and changeth not. He that putteth not out his money to usury, nor taketh reward against the innocent. He that doth these things shall never be moved. So verse 3 today is the one we're going to focus on, where it says, He that backbiteth not with his tongue, nor, let me read off the Bible because I miswrote it there, nor doeth evil to his neighbor, nor taketh up a reproach against his neighbor. This verse is broke down with not colons or semicolons, but commas. And anyone who took a grammar class knows that commas separate a thought that relates to each other. Versus semicolons where the sentence could end, but you choose to go on anyway. So these commas here are all relating to the same thought, while still being separate thoughts themselves. Make sure I said that right. So it breaks down in three parts, pretty much backbiting. It goes, starts with, backbiteth not with his tongue. You're backbiting with your words. Nor doeth evil to his neighbor, which is actions against your neighbor. And then lastly it says, taketh up a reproach against his neighbor, which we'll get into later, is used in that context as an attitude of the heart. And so, just like this whole chapter has done, it focuses on three main aspects of you as a person. Your words, your actions, and your spirit. So, first of all, and I'm going to get right into it because I think I have a lot to say, and we're going to try and stay within time limits today. But number one, it deals with your tongue, or what you say about other people, the actions of your tongue. There's a lot in the Bible that's said about your tongue, and this verse deals with it directly as something that a righteous person uses without malice. Who knows what the word backbiting, or backbite, or backbiteth, whatever version of the word, do you know what that word means? A lot of people means talking about somebody negatively, behind your back, hence the obvious backbiting. It's because you do something to them with malice without them looking or without them being aware of it. To give a very definite definition, it says to say mean or spiteful things about a person, such as someone who is not present. So if I were to come up to you and straight up insult you, that's more spiritual than backbiting. Because to come up to you and do it to your face, you are very much aware of the wrongdoings I believe about yourself, and I come to you and I tell you, and that's it. While that makes it right or not. Backbiting is spoken out against in the Bible several times because, for one, you're taking your grievances against this person to everybody else and not to the person of which you have the grievances against. Mm-hmm. Because, and you'll notice, like in the New Testament, it gives you the process of how to take problems you have with one another, grievances, insults, whatever, to that person, and the process thereof where you take it to one person. If he decides not to respond or do anything about it, you grab a couple more people and you bring it to him again, then you bring it before the church and so on. So that's the process of how a righteous man takes care of issues he has with people. And that's in every aspect of life. I mean, you go to them first, and then you go, if they don't do anything or don't respond to it, you take another person, and you take another person, and you have to go through a whole group of people to make sure this is resolved and your integrity is intact. Backbiting is completely the other way. Very curious that the Bible would deal with your behavior that seemingly has nothing to do with hurting someone else's feelings, right? That is wrong. Because most people, when they talk about people behind their back with their grievances, they say, well, they probably don't even understand what they're doing, but here's all the problems I have with them. In using the excuse that you just don't want to hurt their feelings, you hurt their feelings more, and you're really just trying to gain sympathy from everybody else about their wrongdoings to you. It has nothing to do with your justification for you talking about me behind my back. You don't want to hurt my feelings. Maybe you think that I don't understand what I'm doing, and so you just want to get somebody else's opinion on the matter. That's backbiting. If I have a problem with Elizabeth, and this is a marriage, so it's completely different, but if we're complete two separate people and I have a problem with Elizabeth, and I go to Seth and I say, you know, she's doing all this stuff, and it hurts my feelings, and I think she's a rotten person for doing it, but I don't want to hurt her feelings. So if you could just keep that to yourself, that would be great. I mean, I just don't want to stir the pot, you know. I don't want to do it. And then someone walks in. What are y'all talking about? Well, it's not. I don't really want to. Okay, here's what's going on. And then because you don't want to stir the pot, you don't want to hurt their feelings, you don't want to deal with the problem. You make this problem for everybody and making sure that everybody understands your point of view before it gets back to Elizabeth. And now she's wondering, why didn't he just come to me over this? I didn't even realize I was doing it. And so now the turnaround has come back to me backbiting because I went to Seth with my opinion of what she was doing and what was going on, of what I thought was going on, and make sure everyone was on my side about what was going on, so when the situation does come to a head, because it always does, that everyone understands that it's not my fault. Just to drive home the meaning of backbiting, it says in the definition itself, to say mean or spiteful things about a person. When you say the word spiteful, what do you think of? I've got that definition too. It means petty, ill, or hatred with the disposition to irritate, annoy, or thwart. Now that sounds like siblings most times, sadly enough. But this is not exactly how it is. It also means to treat maliciously. So that word spite, which is directly related to the definition of backbite, because that's what you're doing. You're doing it to spite somebody. Means to treat maliciously with a disposition to irritate, annoy, or thwart because of your petty, ill, or hatred. So because somebody has done something to you that's pretty petty, you now have ill feelings toward them or hatred. And so now you're going to backbite. What part of this so far sounds like something a righteous person should do? None of it.
Nope.
But how many times do we catch ourselves doing it because we don't want to hurt people's feelings? Because we don't want to start nothing. I just need some advice on this. So we choose to go this route. Part one of this verse deals with the tongue and how you use it. not only when you are talking without that person there, but you're doing it for the sole purpose of maliciously attacking their character or actions, and whether by embellishment or flat-out lying, destroying them to other people. It's just like people who don't want to start anything but want to make sure that everything is going to fall in their favor when this does come out. A lot of this happens because people are people, and particularly in a sinful world, if you go to that person and say something to them, they will do the same to you. I've heard it put this way: if you don't do it first, it'll never fall in your favor.
You get the first punch in.
Believe me, that's the way it is. If you go to somebody the way you ought to and say, you know, this is what it is, they take it the wrong way, they'll go scorched earth. They will backbite, and they will make sure everyone is not on your side by the time it comes around to you. Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you this. Do you believe you're God? Do you believe in that process? Do you believe that that's the right way to do it? More on that later. This backbiting is worse than gossip. This is not gossip. Don't put that in there. No. Gossip is a personal rumor or fact about you that gets spread around. Some people may use gossip as a weapon in backbiting, but it is not the same thing as backbiting. I heard a wonderful sermon one time called "The Gossip of the Church, Backbiting." And it was using this scripture to... What really was going on was there was gossip about the preacher going around, so he preached a series on it. And he put backbiting in there as a terrible sin, you know, with God, and it was all one thing. And he kind of jumbled it up, and it didn't really make that much sense. And it didn't make sense because gossip is not backbiting. Gossip is not good to spread. And in fact, that's easy by just going to that person and asking them if it's true. And if it's not true, you'll hear it really quick. Backbiting is the next level, if you will, because gossip is usually some personal facts spread around with some embellishment. This backbiting is deliberate attacking on your character, beliefs, or actions. It's the coward's way out because you air out your self-righteous thoughts of that person in question to everyone else in anger and frustration, to the point where everything you say is skewed by your own spite, which is filled with opinion. Everyone knows how I feel about opinions in this church. I don't believe that you can be a child of God and hold a handful of opinions that form your life. Because opinion is not of the Bible. There are truths and beliefs put forth in the Bible and principles, not opinions, that guide a Christian's life. This beginning of backbiting is when you're angry and frustrated at this person for even saying something or taking it the wrong way. So instead of repenting and coming to your brother and apologizing that they, you know, took it that way, or if you really did mean it, repenting of the sin that you were committing, we now form an opinion of how that person got there and why they're wrong. And this opinion will further skew the purpose of the first action that was taken, which was talking to that person. Or if you saw something out of context, if you saw them walking with a brown paper bag and you assumed it was liquor, you know, well, now that person is gone and everything they believe is down the toilet, and now everybody's going to know about it because you don't like that person because of your opinion of that person. Remember that you represent Christ in everything you do. So anything that is taken out of context and put in there is now associated with your God, your belief system, and your church. So anything they spread about you personally, whether it be at home, workplace, out in public, Walmart, whatever. Walmart doesn't count as public. Walmart's Walmart. Anything you see there is completely out of everything, and you take it the wrong way, then this backbiting starts with you for the purpose of tearing down your religion. Because in the end, it's not about defaming you, it's about defaming the Christ that you claim to serve, which you claim can save you, which you claim is better than what they have. And because they know it's better than anything they have, they will do everything they can to tear it down and make it false. In James 3, 5, and 6, it says, "Even so, the tongue is a little member, and boasteth great things. Behold, how great a matter a little fire kindleth." You ever put lighter fluid on a fire? It's amazing. And it is bright, and it is brilliant, and it's huge. But it's dangerous. It is also very short-lived. As long as you're squirting that lighter fluid on that fire, it is going to be big and boisterous and huge and hot. But the moment you take it away, provided it doesn't go back to the bottle and blow it up, when the moment you stop, the fire goes right back down to whatever it was. Just goes right back down. It goes on to say in verse 6, "And the tongue is a fire," that's your fire, "a world of iniquity. So is the tongue among our members, that it defileth the whole body, and setteth on fire the course of nature, and it is set on fire of hell." That is an unbridled tongue who speaks anything that they think. Because the tongue is a fire, and anything you put on fire is going to burn hotter. The words you use are the kindling that keeps that fire going. What kind of fire are you burning here? And because it is so little, we often take it for granted. "The wickedness that our opinion sets in our hearts is deadly. Can a man who has sworn his life to Christ have an opinion about another living person outside their need for Christ? Ask yourself how you can, quote, vent about people to your family or coworkers and spread spiteful opinions about them and yet claim to know how Christ has forgiven you." In that same chapter of James, he asked the question, "Doth a fountain send forth at the same place sweet water and bitter?" That's in verse 11. This is a rhetorical question because the answer is obviously no, because we don't consider our words before they're read. Said, read, it says read, said. So think about that next time you need to just vent to somebody. How about you just vent to that person? How about you just tell that person? And part of one problem I really have about venting is that you're angry.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Is that you're frustrated. You're angry. You have literally, it's be ye angry and sin not. This applies very heavily because when you go to somebody to vent about this person, you are backbiting that person because you illegitimately have a problem with this person because they made you mad over something and they may have been doing the right thing. But it made you mad because it made you, you know, you're not even in trouble. You're just uncomfortable with it. You don't agree with them. And so you go and vent to this person and just blow up and you say, you exaggerate the truth of the matter and it gets around. So when next time before you go vent to somebody, how about you turn on your old check valve and let the steam blow off and think about the situation and what you're about to do? Because you may say something and it'll be, you know, just exactly what the situation was, but because you're angry about it, this makes it a bad thing to the next person. And you say things when you're mad you're not supposed to say, or you don't mean it. You may not mean it, but guess what? You just meant it because everybody else took it how you meant it. And you can go back to those people and say, "I shouldn't have said that. It's not really what I felt. It's not really what I meant." And you know what? It means about as much as two beans does to a hungry person. Absolutely nothing.
That's right.
You've said it. They've taken it. And they will tell every one of their friends. Boy, I tell you, this person was mad today. They're mad at this person. And here's why. Everyone loves a good story like that. Because, you know, even when they come in and vent to me, I keep it to myself. But I tell you, way back when, it was really tempting us to go up to an expert and say, "Man, I just got an earful from this person." "Oh, really? About what?" Let me tell you what they just told me. I don't think it's going to get better. And then you discuss the whole situation. More people, it's just like we were saying earlier, more people come in and say, "What's going on, guys?" Water cooler is real, okay? Oh, yeah. And it doesn't have to be a water cooler either. It can be anything. Maybe a speck of dirt on the floor, everyone's just standing. It's just the way things work. And so whether you meant it or not, your venting has now vented to the whole place, to the whole church, to the whole house, and you meant it. And that is sinful, because you have spoken in anger and you have chosen to spread rumors and backbite about this person simply because you're mad. Because of what they did, whether it's the right thing, whether it's the wrong thing, and they may be completely wrong about it. That does not give you the right to vent. Yeah. That does not give you a pass to be angry and go ahead and sin.
Right. True.
Your tongue is a member that will get you in more trouble with God quicker than anything else.
Yes.
Do not speak in haste. Haste makes waste, and you do waste words.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're angry, it's just like shoveling coal into a train. It gets hotter and hotter and hotter and goes faster and faster and faster. And the only way to stop it is to crash it. And it will crash. So in the second part of this verse, it says, "Nor doeth evil to his neighbor," which moves on from slandering behind their back and goes straight to committing evils against them. As if what we talked about wasn't enough evil against them. This shares close to the same meaning, because it's anything you do to somebody. You know, because who is your neighbor? Everybody's your neighbor. Anyone you come into contact with is your neighbor. But you do it with ill will or malicious intent. So say you did just go vent to somebody. You're still sinning. No excuse. You're still backbiting. But this here is deliberate actions toward this person in order to hurt them, their reputation, or their belief system. Have you ever done something and then said to yourself, you know what I should have done? I should have done it this way, you know, just to spite this person. You know what I should have done? I should have done this, just to spite you.
Nah, people wouldn't do that.
I hear it at work like 5 times a day. That's exactly how it goes. And sometimes I have to sit there and think to myself, you know, if someone makes me mad, and I don't turn my check valve on and say, you know what I should do now? You know what I should do now? I should do this, just to spite them. That's cutting off your nose to spite your face. But once you, and if you don't, if you say that to anybody, they take it and run with it as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's best to turn on your check valve, do your job, do it right, do it in the church, at home, doesn't matter where. As long as you're doing right, you are not doing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Super, super, super obvious there, but true. It's the wrong attitude, and just like that, you're in the wrong. Whether you did something wrong or not, you're in the wrong. It's just like the attitude of loaning money affects your heart, so does your words and your actions towards other people. And you'll soon just become this person who does evil to everybody, because that's just what you do. You know, I know a lot of people that have instant friends. We all know that person. They just have instant friends. I just met you. Let's go have a coffee sometime. Yeah, and they go out and have a coffee, and everything's great. They're friends. They come into work the next day, and they bring each other coffee, bring each other donuts. They sit in each other's office and, you know, kind of shoot the breeze a little bit, you know. That's me sitting in a chair, you know. And that's just, and they just talk it up. And then 1 week, just one day, just randomly, you notice they're not going to each other's office anymore. There's just no coffee. They come in, one with Dunkin', one from Starbucks. You notice they didn't go to the same place. Like, man. And then some people start rumors. You know? Happens. But it's out of the abundance the heart speaketh. But how long you entertain those thoughts matters. They do one thing that they don't agree with. I didn't think you were that kind of person. You need to back off a little bit. And so they, you know, their friendship has to separate a little bit, because we can't do that. I can't be friends with somebody who will go and do that, who does this, who will say that kind of stuff to me. I'm not ready for that. And so then they had to back off their friendship, you know. I was talking to one of my coworkers the other day, and he had a similar experience. He said they hit it off really well. They went to dinner. They invited him to church. They come to church. And he said it was going really good. And he said about 3 weeks into it, I said, that soon. He goes, that soon. He said, he just pulls out You know, he never did it when they were at church or on a lunch date or anything. So he pulled out a big old can of chew, and she pulled out a cigarette. And he goes, and that's when I got just a little uncomfortable. He said, I didn't really want that kind of influence around me, you know, because he said, before I knew Jesus, he said, I used to chew, and he said, I really don't want to be around that. He said, I don't believe it's what you should do and everything. So he said, so I said something to the guy. I said, okay. He said, and I never saw the guy again. He said, he never come to church. He never answered my text to see if he wanted to go to dinner. Nothing. Mm-hmm. Instant friend. Instant unfriend. Just like Facebook. You know, you hit a button, you're done. That easy, folks, I guess. I don't know. But just like last week when we talked about how evil communications corrupt good manners, the control and captivity of your thoughts will begin to affect how you treat other people in your life. Obviously, that person decided that they didn't want that toxic negativity in their life, that they shouldn't be chewing and smoking, and cut them off. Were they ever really friends?
Nope.
Well, that tells me nope. You just make your own distinction. Anyone you encounter in life has the possibility of needing Christ, because most people will. But how many people see Christ in you? And they will not if you act the same way. It's malicious intent towards anybody that crosses your path that doesn't agree with you. He kind of lucked out there, they just dumped him and never come back. Most people will go around to other people and slam you down and tell them everything that they've ever learned that's somewhat personal about your life that doesn't agree with your religion and see how religious you really are. But you decide to choose these people to let into your life intimately before trying their spirit to see if they be of God.
Yes.
Little side note here is that not everyone holds this principle in their heart.
No, they don't. Nope. No.
And if you do, most times there will be a person that chooses to deal thusly with you. How you react is just as important. Just a little side note here. The heart of one who's right with Christ ought to understand the evil and injustice that you will endure if you make this mistake. But not react that way, because fighting fire with fire does not work. This sounds, again, very obvious, but fighting fire with water, the water of the Word of God, works a whole lot better, because a soft answer turneth away wrath. And most times, if you try to say anything, it's moot point anyway, because they've already won. They've already gone guns blazing with the backbiting, and they've already walked around to everyone you know, told them how religious you aren't. Everything that you've done that doesn't line up with what they've heard all their life about what you say you believe, it doesn't even matter if you said it. It just matters that you do it. It's the right thing to do, and that's the core thing of this, is you must do what's right because it's what God commands. I'm trying to hurry up because I'm running out of time here. But if you... A friend is a spiritual thing. It's not a physical thing. We've turned it into a physical thing.
Right.
But, and here's what we've done even further, is because the world is so spiritually dark, we've gone from a spiritual thing and made it a mental thing, and now it's even worse. Because you can go on Facebook and hit add,
friend.
Well, there's Stacy on Facebook, add friend. Or do you even know her? I say, yeah, she goes to church with me. Does that mean we're like really close friends that we confide in? I mean, is that what this is? You just add friend and all of a sudden, I know you like my, you know, I've known you my whole life. That's because I scroll back to 2016, so you know, that's not how it works. You know, but it's that mentality that we've implemented in the society that if we add friend, we're friends. You know, people at work love to do this, is that, you know, some people block their bosses on Facebook, and other people try to buddy up to the boss by adding him on Facebook. And I knew one guy, he added me on Facebook, and I do not respond to friend requests that quick. For one, I don't look at them that much. Shame on me, I guess. And number two is that you don't know who these people are. You just hired them. They find you on Facebook, and they add you. Red flag, no. And so I do not accept it. Well, I come into work the next day. Hey, did you see my friend request? I found you on Facebook. I just tell them, well, I really just don't get on there that much, to be honest with you. And they go, oh, okay, okay. Well, it's on there. It's on there. Okay. So about that time, I go in my office, shut my door, and scroll through their Facebook profile, and it's loaded. And you still let the friend request sit there for a little while just to see if they're actually going to make it, because if they quit in a few days, you want to delete them. Because usually what they're doing is another way to get a hold to you. And you're their friend. You're there to help them. You're there to do this. You're there to do that. They can confide in you. And you can confide in them, too. No, they want something from you, usually, because that's what friends do. Friends is not, because the Bible talks a lot about friends and how it's a spiritual matter. It's just like this. How can two walk together except they be agreed? This applies in marriage. It applies in friendships. Because let me tell you, if you can't be friends with somebody, it's hard. You can't be a friend with a Catholic, a really close, good friend with a Catholic, because he doesn't believe in the same God you do.
That's right.
He doesn't go to the same churches, even the same type of churches you do. He believes completely different about drinking alcohol and speaking in tongues and who can talk to him and who Mary was in relation to Christ. You cannot walk together with them. You cannot be friends. You can't, because it will poison your mind. You won't poison his because he won't listen to you, but he will poison yours. He will insert doubt in your family as to what actually is true. He will talk to your kids before they're established and sow tares in your wheat. Same thing with Mormons. It's the same thing with most evangelicals nowadays who believe in that theistic evolution. They are... all they're there to do is sow tares in your wheat. They're not there to be your friend. They're there to convert you.
Yeah.
Because while they may be wrong, y'all can get along. You're wrong to him. And the only reason he gets along is to convert you. Mm-hmm. In doing what you said you're doing, he's doing it to you. Mm-hmm. This is a spiritual thing, because two spirits who are agreed can be friends. That's why when a saved and an unsaved are married, it is so hard to work on things. Because you're coming at it from this point of view, and they're coming at it from this point of view, and it just doesn't work, because you don't see it the way they do.
Yep.
You see the reason. You see the way it works. You see the process. You see how it's been through the years. You can see all this, and the Bible tells you the answers, but you believe the Bible, and they don't. And that goes both ways. You believe the Bible, and they don't. So how can two walk together except they be agreed on how to do things? And believe me, marriage is about agreeing on how to do things. Whoever said that marriage is a lot of compromise is a liar. Because compromise in marriage doesn't work. You know what compromise in marriage is? Yeah. It's usually when you just do it the woman's way because you're tired of arguing. Or you divorce her. That's compromise. You just go do your own thing. You can have kids, whatever, it doesn't matter, because now co-parents are pretty popular.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good compromise, because they compromised and left each other. It doesn't work, because you think you can be friends with these people and still maintain the integrity of Christ. You can know these people. You can talk to these people, but to go so in depth that you can divulge personal information and you can get help and advice from these people is wrong. And one day, when they backbite, you're going to learn that. And if you don't learn that the hard way, good for you, because most people do. You cannot trust somebody who has the integrity of a lost person. It never ends well. Finally, the third aspect deals with your heart. It says, nor taketh up a reproach against his neighbor. The end of the verse deals with the overall approach of your heart. To reproach some, to find reproach with somebody is to find a cause or occasion of blame, discredit, or disgrace. Well, that wraps up in a nice little bow, which is backbiting. But it goes farther than that. The most basic way to say this is that they always find reason, listen close now, to blame you, discredit you, or disgrace you in their own heart. This goes farther than just talking to people, to a group of people that you know, talking to your pastor. I know a lot of people go straight to the pastor with all these things that people have done wrong and how he needs to preach a sermon on it, because that's just not how it goes. But let's not go to him and say anything. We better not do that. Usually this is to benefit their own image on how other people view them. You're a better person because Seth does this, and he's supposed to be a Christian. I'm a better person because, you know, Mike's a preacher and he doesn't even do this, which I do. It discredits them in their own heart. This is how they view people. There are a group of people that claim to be pessimists. There are actually people that simply think evil of everyone.
Yes.
Call them paranoid, call them negative, no matter how you slice it, that's what they do.
Yep.
You know, pessimism is a lost art because it is thinking of the worst case scenario while hoping for the best one. That's the actual duty of a pessimist, is always bringing out what could happen and to be prepared for it and not to just simply think evil of everybody.
Right.
Pessimism is a form of thinking and not a type of person, which is where we've lost the definition. The Bible cautions against trusting everyone, and I don't believe you should, but there should be a hearty helping of believing the best in people. Because,
that's
like
right.
it or not, you were not the most likable person before you were saved.
Right. Yeah.
You were not the most trustworthy person before you were saved.
Yeah.
You may have been trying to do good, but if you constantly view people with the modern definition of pessimism, they will never believe that what you have is any better than what everyone else is trying
right.
to give them.
Right.
People,
charity.
Yes, charity suffereth long and is kind.
Mm-hmm.
That chapter is probably the best chapter to memorize that we've ever done. In his everyday life, I mean, it applies to everything we talk about. I know, I see it, everybody. I see it. I'm getting there. Thinking the best in people surprises them because they're constantly saying, you know, when they say something bad, they say, I bet you think I'm terrible. And they say it with a smile on their face. And then they state, you know, I'm going, you know, they state where they're going when they die. Almost in a blasphemous way.
Yeah.
You know, I know you think I'm going to hell, but you know, this is just how I believe. And sometimes I say, yes, sir, I do believe you're going to hell.
Mm-hmm.
In a handbasket.
Yeah.
And I said that to one person, they're like, well, thanks for being honest with me. I'm like, you said it. You
right.
know it.
You said it.
You know how I believe. You know that because I believe what I believe, and it is true, that you are in fact going to hell. Do they care? No. They're almost making fun of the fact that you know that they're going to hell and that they don't care.
That's
yep.
right.
They taunt you constantly because you know where they're going. You care where they're going. You try to tell them good things and they do nothing but mock you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because of the way you act, it condemns them and constantly reminds them where they're going and why they're going there.
Mm-hmm.
Their words condemn their soul when you're around because of the spirit you carry with you. Unless it's this spirit.
Yeah.
Mm. When you're constantly thinking about the evil someone may or may not be doing, or what they may or may not think about the evil that you may or may not be doing, it distracts from the mission of Christ that you're supposed to be committed to.
Yeah.
What does your life reflect? Does it encourage the backbiting? Do you take part in the backbiting? Do you respond in a ill manner towards backbiting? Does your tongue work for the devil? Because that's what it's doing if you're backbiting. If you retaliate against backbiting. Because the best thing you can do is to stay silent and let God work it out. Because it will.
Yeah.
You know, maybe not the way you want it to, but it will. Do your hands do the devil's work? With the actions you do to the people that backbite your back, if you will? And does your heart destroy people before you even speak to them with this attitude of pessimism? The attitude of your heart will reflect the relationship you have with Christ. Just like you talked about the other night, where the more you dwell in the Spirit, the closer you will dwell with the Spirit.
Yes.
Same thing here. You can distract yourself. If you're distracting yourself constantly with different types of music, hateful speech, hateful actions, as well as judging people so harshly that you have destroyed their character before you even met them, then you have destroyed any work Christ has tried to do in your heart. There are too many lumps in that clay to make a good pot. You must allow Him by dwelling in the Spirit and concentrating on spiritual matters, not what everyone else is doing to you, but the matters of the Spirit, in order to have this correct Spirit in you. It's all about how it's translated.